Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome to a pre-season business edition of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
Is Lewandowski to Barca a pipe dream going up in smoke? Also, Lukaku goes back to Inter to get his mojo working again. But what are the knock-on effects of his return to Serie A? And who's done the best Euro business in the Premier League so far? Andy, I don't know about you, but I can actually see Lewandowski in Barca's red and blue stripes. Is that in my dreams?
Well, it's a dream that's been pushed all over the place, hasn't it? It's been clear that two out of the three parties desperately want it. But Bayern have not really had to batten down the hatches as much as they might have done. And they set their stall out pretty early in the window. They said that they weren't going to let him go. They were going to hold him to the last year of his contract, as we mentioned before on here. Uli Hoeneß, who still likes a word, even though he's got not so much day-to-day involvement with Bayern, he said, well, we've seen how Lewandowski works. He wanted to leave for us a year before he actually did. He wanted to leave Dortmund a year before, and they held him to the last year of his contract, and he had a really productive season, so we know he's not going to down tools. And the biggest problem, though, has been Barcelona, because we have made progress. Lewandowski has got Bayern to a point where they're happy to name a price, which they weren't even a month ago. But the big problem is Barcelona can't come anywhere near that, despite the fact they're moving various financial chairs at the end of their financial year at the moment. Of course, they've got in a bit more cash from partial sale of their TV rights. They've sold 10% of their TV rights, we found out on Thursday afternoon, to an American hedge fund. That means they've still got 15% of their TV rights that they're allowed to sell, because they're given permission by the socios of the club, or the socios representing the voices of the other socios, to sell up to 25% of those TV rights. I don't know about you, David, but at a point where they still can't register Christensen, Kessier, or even Sergi Roberto, who was already their player and they've re-signed to a new contract, it all seems incredibly short-termist.
Yeah, it is. It's very. I think it's really, really bleak. And I think what makes it worse is, you know, if they are doing these deals, I mean, they've played it down. They've said, like, you know, the idea of this cash injection basically is just to, you know, make sure they end the financial year in profit. So they're playing down that the fact that the money's for actual signings, but, I mean, we all know it is. The fact that they want to spend some of the money that they freed up on a 33-year-old striker who has pretty much won it all, and you do have to wonder, you know, how much hunger has he still got? How much has also he still got in the tank in Lewandowski? It's just another strange, strange Barcelona decision. And look, I know he's one of the best strikers in the world, of course, but it is. It's all short-termist. The long-term plan in there from Barca just doesn't seem really to be there, and it's gravely concerning. And you know, the back and forths with Gavi on a new contract, and you know, and other young players have been asked to drop their demands and such, and it's poor. It really has, and it's not going to be a while before they actually sort themselves out. If you know, I'm talking a long, long time before they actually do as well.
What about the Barca fans, though, David? They must be at least intrigued, if not excited, about the prospects of somebody like Lewandowski, age, you know, notwithstanding, coming to Barca nevertheless.
Yeah, of course. It's Robert Lewandowski. He's been one of the best strikers in the world for the last couple of years, of course. But I think that Barcelona fans are a funny bunch. They care a lot. You know, there's some who are willing to, you know, leave the star signings, leave the big names, and operate on a basis of bringing in young players, be through the academy or around Europe. They'd rather sign a bright young player with a big future. You know, it's why there's so much, you know, sadness over what's happening with Frenkie de Jong. I think there was like a lot of feeling for him and what he could bring as well, but it just hasn't worked out. And you know, I think they'd rather see somebody like him succeed or see a player from the academy succeed than Lewandowski come in. But then there is that other part of the fan base that does want signings now and to compete now on all fronts. And I don't think even if they get Lewandowski that they're prepared to do that.
I think the other thing is that they need defenders. I mean, they spent a lot of January getting forward players. I think if you're talking about on terms of what they actually need on the pitch, they need reliable centre-backs for a start. The midfield, they've got sorted, and I think the fact that they've got a young midfield that's going to be propelled forward by Pedri, Gavi, Nico, that sort of allows them to sell the illusion of the fact that they're going forward with young players, whereas the rest of the team, you know, they've already brought in Aubameyang, who's, you know, short term been very successful and I think could continue to be for a while. The problem that Joan Laporta, the president, has done is, and we've seen this with selling part of the rights, with getting a deal with Spotify that's what a lot of Barcelona observers believe is below market value for the shirts and for the sponsorship of Camp Nou, is without superstars, you can't get the big sponsorship deals. And I think sometimes, as fans, we always look at it like, you know, what is the player who's going to be the silver bullet that's going to push my team over the hump? And a lot of elite clubs, I don't think, look at it like that anymore. Like, how is this player going to fit? How are we going to sell the sponsorships? How are we going to get Twitter, Instagram, Facebook impressions? All of that sort of stuff matters to advertisers and matters to the financial health of the club.
I think it matters a lot to Javier Tebas as well. If you look at the way that he's gone at PSG, he's gone at Man City, he's so envious of the superstars that are going to the Premier League. That Mbappe stayed at PSG. He's envious of this. And he's tried to curate the league on a basis of, you know, pushing it forward with those sponsorship deals that you mentioned as well. And this is a big, big issue for him. And every now and then it does boil over and he is gravely, gravely concerned. And he knows that he can try and sell La Liga on the stance of, you know, look at some of the great young players that are there and such like that. But there is still not really that, you know, those big superstars, they just aren't there anymore. They're still in a depression, still in a hangover from the Messi Ronaldo years.
This tweet from Callum to us, and he asked the question I suppose everybody wants to know. Where do you actually think Lewandowski will end up or not end up this season? If he doesn't make it to Barcelona, where will he be playing? Will he just run out his contract to the point where he can go for free?
I think he's a Bayern player in 22-23. I just don't think Barcelona have the ability to make it happen. I think Bayern will hold him to his contract, as we said, knowing that he will continue to be very productive for them. But I think the idea that there'll be less of a market for Lewandowski next year, I don't buy that at all. I mean, he'll be 34 by then, of course, but you look at him, he's not just a player who's maintaining his form, he's a player that's improving his form going into his 30s. I think he's got plenty of years left. I think he's very, very attractive on a free next summer. Maybe Barcelona, which seems to be the only club he wants, are at the front of the queue then. Goodness knows what financial position they'll be in by then. But I guess the extra year gives Chelsea, Paris Saint-Germain, others the opportunity to make their representations to him. Because I think the thing we've seen, Dotton, with this market this summer is that there are not a lot of top line A-plus elite number nines out there in the market. And I think you look at the way that some of the biggest clubs are looking at reinforcing their squads, I think the market's quite tight in that sense. And I wonder if that's had an influence on, say, you know, Lukaku moving back to Inter. And I think it's certainly, if we go back a year, had an influence in Chelsea re-signing a player that was completely unsuitable for them.
I wouldn't be surprised if we got to the end of this window and Chelsea have maybe had a futile experience in terms of trying to get a striker in. And they might just put a little cheeky last minute. Honestly, last day of the window, one more little bit in for Lewandowski. Can we get him in? I wouldn't be surprised at all if they tried something like that. But I completely agree with you. I think Lewandowski is going to remain a Bayern player. And you said a word when describing Barcelona and Laporta: illusion, giving off illusions. I think that's exactly where it is. They want to give off the impression that they are competing in the market. They were even talking about a few months ago about Haaland. They were never anywhere near Haaland. But they were still talking about him as a possibility, and other players as well. They're doing it with Rafinha now as well. It's giving their fans hopes. It's selling illusions to them. And ultimately, I think they're nowhere near the top end of the market to compete.
Still looking at it, I would still rather have Barcelona's problems, as complex as they are, and you've outlined very well, I think. I'd still rather have their problems than have the problem that Atletico Madrid have got, where they're losing their star player. Antoine Griezmann has been something of a talisman, but it looks like he's going now. And it doesn't seem to be much they can do to keep him. Or am I wrong in this, Andy?
Well, I think there's a couple of issues here. Firstly, the speculation around Griezmann, who Enrique Cerezo, the president, said at the end of last season is definitely staying and will be an Atletico player next season. The speculation has arisen by the fact they've agreed a deal to sign Axel Witsel, the midfielder who's left Borussia Dortmund, as a bit of experienced holding in midfield. It seems they can't get him on the wage bill at the moment. A similar situation to the one that Barcelona are experiencing, because there is a salary cap in La Liga. You can't spend more than 70% of your income on wages. And they're very, very close to the top. And they've been operating like this for a while, Atletico. And because Barcelona's situation is so dire, I think it's easy to overlook what a financial tightrope Atletico tread. Because their costs have spiraled over the last 8 to 10 years as they've become more successful as well. And you look at Griezmann, and it was a good deal to get him back from Barcelona. But not only those massive wages, the fact is his confidence is drained in 2022. He's in recent months, he's looked poor for Atletico. He's looked poor for France. He's not looked like scoring, and he hasn't scored in La Liga for months and months and months. He's on a really bad dry spell with France as well. And even Didier Deschamps, who's a huge Griezmann loyalist has questioned him in recent months, and you know, maybe he won't end up in the 11 when it comes to the World Cup. So Griezmann's in a difficult spot. He's 31. I don't think Atletico will be able to get out from under their obligation of buying him, personally, especially when you look at the wages, David.
Yeah, absolutely. The clause that makes them the deal obligatory is easy to get. I think it's 50% of the games, and he has to play 45 minutes in them. That's easily done. He's going to play those. 40 million obligatory at the end of the next season, the current season, as we move into it. And yeah, it was a poorly structured deal on the part of Atleti. They didn't really look at the big picture, but I think Atleti's situation has somewhat been underrated and overlooked because of just how much of a mess Barcelona have been. But Atleti are in a serious, serious position here where they need to make 40 million this summer. They need to, you know, that they need 40 million in from sales. They're going to have to move somebody on. There's a lot of talk of Renan Lodi. And he's somebody I think they should be moving on with. A young Brazilian there with massive, massive potential. He's somebody you should be building the next core of your squad with. But it looks like he's going to go. The Carrasco talk never, ever goes away. You know, there's always talk of him potentially going as well because he remains a saleable asset. And Atleti are going to have to do this every single summer because their costs are just out of control. Now, they never really seem to... I think they make a step forward, but they're always taking two back every single window, I always think. And you look at it this window, Witzel, his best years are completely behind him. You know, and the fact that Atleti are making him their, you know, their cornerstone signing is remarkable. And I think it really, really emphasizes just how bad of a situation Atleti are in. There's a multitude of factors. Diego Simeone is on a huge, huge salary. There's a lot of players on very, very big salaries as well. I think money hasn't been spent wisely. They've not been smart in the market for quite some time now, I don't think, Atleti. And yeah, they've got big, big problems. And it would be a bigger story if it weren't for just the absolutely ridiculous situation Barcelona are in.
Talking of top-class elite centre-forwwards, Andy, you touched on Lukaku. If we can just examine his situation a little bit more. Obviously, you know, it didn't work out for him at Chelsea. He wanted to go back to Inter, it seems, at least from that controversial social media contribution that he made last year at some point that got him into a lot of trouble. So he's back there where he belongs, you could argue. What difference does it make, and not just to Inter, but indeed to the whole sort of transfer musical chairs in Serie A?
Well, it's interesting, Dotton, because before the Lukaku deal was even a possibility, we were being sold the idea of Paulo Dybala to Inter. Now, what I think has been really interesting about this window is the prospective and now completed re-signing of Lukaku has not dampened the Dybala talk. So we're looking at this front three of Lukaku, Lautaro Martinez, who they're going to be hanging on to, and Paulo Dybala. Now, Dybala's frequent injury issues notwithstanding, and, you know, I think that makes him a very, very risky free, in inverted commas, signing indeed, especially when you look at his age and his last couple of seasons. What were we talking about earlier about teams going with what looks shiny and what looks commercially attractive rather than what they actually need on the pitch? I mean, Nicky Bandini told us a couple of months ago on here that Inter needed to reduce their wage bill by about 15%. And, you know, they're going after, they've re-signed Lukaku, which is not cheap. They're looking at signing Dybala. They've already offered him a contract. They've signed Henrik Mkhitaryan on a free on wages that Roma weren't prepared to match. And how are they going to finance this? By selling Milan Skriniar, arguably their best centre-back, to PSG, it looks like. I mean, it's an extraordinary decision, really. I mean, there's no doubt from the Lukaku perspective how good this looks, because, you know, he had become like such a millstone for Chelsea. They had basically done all their money. He'd got himself to a point where his value had dropped so much. I mean, like, people are saying this is just kicking the can down the road as far as Chelsea are concerned because Inter can't afford to buy him permanently. Well, no, they can't at the moment. I mean, who knows? They might have different ownership by this time next year, or extra investors by this time next year. But they had to do something. At the very least, I think this reinflates Lukaku's value if he gets out there and plays well. But it's not a given, because as well as you talked about how he upset Chelsea fans with his sortie in the Italian media when he was trying to make up that rupture he had in his relationship with the Inter fans, because that was obviously preying on his mind. There are a lot of Inter fans who haven't forgiven him. And I know there are people out there who say, well, when he scores goals, it'll be fine. They'll get over it. Some Inter fans won't get over it. I don't think there'll ever be the affection that there was before. And given that Lukaku is a player who needs the affection of the fans, he needed the affection of Antonio Conte, and that brought the very best out of him and career best performances out of him, I don't think this being a success is an absolute banker.
Andy, do you think that the main thing here is that Lukaku is returning to daddy? just for people who don't get the reference, there was a report this week that that Thomas Tuchel and Lukaku were watching a Spurs game together, and Tuchel turned to Lukaku and said to him, as a joke apparently, "Oh, there's your daddy," in reference to Antonio Conte. And it's quite remarkable, really, that you know, that if that comment is true. And Lukaku was offended by it as well.
Well, I think with Thomas Tuchel, it's always about delivery. I mean, that's the story of his life, really. I think it is interesting when you look at him going back there. I mean, it does change, as Dotton was asking before, the market out there for strikers in Serie A. I mean, you look at Gianluca Scamacca, who is making himself the future number nine of the Italy team, the current number nine of the Italy team. Sassuolo have set a big, but I don't think unreasonable, price on him of about 45 million when you look at his ability and how young he is and what he could turn into. Inter were interested. That door is shut. I don't see where Juventus are getting the money from, particularly once the Pogba deal gets over the line. And like, maybe PSG are the bet here, because they've been very interested in him. But I think when we're talking about that, how short we are in terms of strikers out there, what's interesting is Nicolò Saniolo. Now, we had this tweet here from JWM Football saying, "Nicolò Saniolo is strongly rumoured to be unwanted by Roma despite his obvious potential and standing by him with two serious injuries." He did his cruciate in both knees, of course. Why? "He's been linked to Juventus and Spurs. Where would he fit best? Is there another club that would suit him better?" Now, of course, we wouldn't be talking about him as a striker at all, David, if we're going back to pre those injuries. But we've talked about it on here before, about how his body's changed, how he's not got that same burst of speed, but my God, did he go to the gym while he was injured. And it looks like his future is as a centre forward or second striker, because, you know, he's working on holding the ball up now and maybe drifting off the shoulder of the defender. He's got a different role. Firstly, I've got two questions for you. Firstly, do you think that he can reach his full potential? And two, do you think Roma are right to say it's too much of a risk to re-sign him on big wages? Let's cash in on him while he's still got 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah, to answer your first question, absolutely. I do still think he can reach his potential. I think we've seen down the years, players have perhaps not become the player that we thought they would, but they've still excelled. So absolutely. And also, interestingly enough, I think with the way that he's changed, and like you say, those physical aspects and what he's become, I think he quite suits Juve in a way, and their current era. I think he suits them a lot, and you could see him perhaps playing off of Vlahovic You know, I think Juve lack that other striker at the moment, that other option. I think he could play with Vlahovic. I think he could play off Vlahovic as well, you know, or be a replacement if needs be. So I think that option is there, absolutely. And secondly, yeah, I think Roma's completely justified. I think if you are in a precarious position financially, I think you have to weigh up absolutely everything. And they're just being sensible. They're just doing due diligence that every club in every sport, no matter what it is, has to do. They have to look at injury records. They have to look at the way the player is developing and assess from there. And yeah, if they can get money and potentially an option or a loan of a young player from Juve, then I'd do that deal. Yeah, I'd be sitting at the table listening, put it that way.
Let's go back to who's the daddy, at the risk of upsetting Lukaku or anybody else, because he's not the only person who's returned to his his weaning days, or the club where he was weaned at. He wasn't weaned there, actually, was he? Anyway, just for the benefit of my metaphor, Alexander Lacazette and Corentin Tolisso have returned to Lyon. These are two players that they sold for a combined total of 100 million euros. 100 million. They've got them back for nothing. How did they do that?
It's been an effort, Dalton. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I think we talked about it on the last proper OTC of the season. We had this question about what signings would you like to see for the narrative? And I said Lacazette and Tolisso back for Lyon. And at that point, I believe that Lacazette was very possible. I didn't believe Tolisso was possible at all, because at that point, he was free. He was cordial when Lyon inquired, but there was very much a sense of, I want to go and play for a Champions League club, and that will fire my ambitions to get into France's World Cup squad. But the way they've talked him round is impressive. Lacazette, as he said in his own presentation, has been a huge part of that. He said, look, I'm on the recruiting team. You know, there's no doubt that I'm in his ear asking him to come back. And when Tolisso signed and was presented to the media, he said, well, yeah, Lacazette played a massive part in it. It's huge for them, particularly after a season in which they missed out on Europe. But I think it's kind of mutual need in both senses, because I think both Lacazette and Tolisso have shown plenty of their quality in their time, respective times at Arsenal and Bayern, but they've not made a completely convincing case. They've not been consistent enough. Lacazette with form, and particularly goal scoring in his last season at Arsenal, and Tolisso with injuries, and injuries, muscle injuries, have completely ruined his last season at Bayern. They've not convinced that they completely belong at that totally elite level. So they need to go back to a position where they will be senior players and run a team. You know, they will be the heads of that team. And if they shine, like Tolisso's World Cup hopes, which I still think are a bit of a long shot, if he can run things for a team that's on the way back in France and a big team that's always in the headlines, then that's great for him. And with Lyon, they need to put up a flag to say, we're ambitious. You know, they've just been taken over, and they've got two recognisable star names in a French context to come back. So, yeah, I think it's of mutual benefit at the moment.
Andy, the big question is, when is Umtiti getting announced as well?
When he gets a second knee, I think. I mean, look, from a romance perspective, I would personally love Umtiti to go home as well, to join them. He's been a wonderful player. He's huge in France's 2018 World Cup win. But I mean, there are injuries and there are injuries. You know, I think there's been talk in some places that Tolisso's a bit of a gamble. I think that's a reasonable gamble. With Umtiti, there's just, unfortunately, no evidence to suggest he can do it at the top level anymore, David. And you think the first club that came out for him was was Girona. It looks like he might end up at Rennes, but
yeah, I saw that as well.
That Girona came out for him, I think, shows you where he is at the moment. After only starting one La Liga game for Barcelona last season, then it's really sad because what a player he was.
I was just thinking if Umtiti heads back, then I think another of Leon's famous sons, yourself, will return to the city. when the entire band is back together.
Yeah, who's the daddy? You had to bring it back to that.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
There have been a lot of signings and still a lot of questions about who from Europe is coming to the Premier League. Every single team in the Prem seems to be looking to Europe to sign players coming from over there. Which players have caught your eye at the moment? Should take it one at a time. Andy first, then David. Which players are coming over from the Euro leagues have caught your eye, who are coming to the Premier League?
I think the top one's got to be Sven Botman, hasn't it? I think it's a great signing for Newcastle. They've wanted him for a very long time. That they had competition from Milan. I think from a financial perspective, from what I gather, Milan were nowhere near the sort of fee that Newcastle were willing to pay Lille. And that just shows you, really. I mean, we know Newcastle are well backed, but you know they're not spending at Manchester City or Chelsea sort of levels. We've seen this before. Like, and for a very long time, you think of all the way back to N'Golo Kante coming to Leicester instead of Marseille or Lyon, because there's simply more money in the Premier League. But, you know, he's a player who they can build around. And I think when you look at, say, how, in a very different position, of course, Bruno Guimarães has come over from Ligue 1, hit the ground running, really flourished. I think sometimes when a team are building something, and Newcastle are building, the feeling of going from being a good player in a good team, and of course I realise Lille had difficulties last season, but they were champions before that and did brilliantly to be so with Botman at centre back. That feeling of being one of the best players in the team, I think it gives a little lift. You've seen that in the confidence of Bruno Guimarães. You know, he's showed sides to his game that he couldn't even show in France, because he was really a posh water carrier for Lyon, surrounded by better players. I'm not saying that it'll be quite the same divide for Botman, but I think, you know, it's a player they really needed. They needed reinforcement in defence. I wonder if a few bigger clubs will regret not having a little go for them, because the challenge for Newcastle is to stop players coming in and seeing it as a stepping stone to bigger Premier League clubs, I guess.
David?
I think, I mean, we briefly touched on them, but I think Boubacar Camara going to Aston Villa is such a smart, just a brilliant, brilliant deal. Atleti thought they had him in the bag, but apparently a meeting with Gerrard swayed it. So it just goes to show the power that Gerrard's got from his playing days, that he can swing a deal like that. So yeah, I think he's, you know, he's versatile, centre back, defensive mid if needed as well. Still young, I think he's already shown, you know, his potential, how reliable it can be with Marseille. So I really, really like that one for Villa. I'm really, really impressed with that. And I think if I was to throw a curveball in, I think, you know, Brighton's recruitment has been really intelligent for the past few years. I think they've got a fantastic manager in Potter. I think they've for them to get a player like Julio Enciso, who's been so, so impressive in Paraguay, looks really interesting, teenager. He finished the season there with 11 and 14 before leaving. Just a rapid player, good dribbling skills, ability to finish as well. He can play anywhere across the front line. He's going to be a really interesting one to watch in terms of how they develop him, whether they send him on loan somewhere or whether they use him straight away. It's going to be interesting to see how he goes. So I felt like I had to give that a mention as well, because there's some smart business being done about the Premier League by some of these teams.
Yeah, it wouldn't have escaped your knowledge or your interest that Manchester United are looking more and more like a Dutch team nowadays because of Erik ten Hag. Seems like all the Dutch players available are headed straight for Old Trafford. What do you make of this guy that's gone there from Feyenoord? Tyrell Malacia, is it?
Yeah, Malacia, yeah, it's not quite done, but it's one of those with like Frankie de Jong, it looks like it's inevitable. And, you know, if Man United can announce those at the same time, it'll probably just calm things with their fan base for a little bit, you know, after such a torrid time. But yeah, Malacia, you know, the hope is he can be their next Patrice Evra. He can be their next little tenacious player from left back, left wing back, extremely quick. Very, very good 1v1 situations defensively. I think he's got a lot of defensive acumen. I think he's already shown that, you know, his positional sense is good. He's strong in the tackle, very hungry player. There's some work to do, I think, on his end product, you know, on the way that he moves into attack. I think there's work to do there, but you are buying potential here. And the hope is somebody like Ten Hag, who already knows him, you know, really well, that he can really shape him and better than previous Man United managers have done with young talent. So that's going to be a really interesting one to see.
And Andy, I've taught you before about what Taiwo means in the Yoruba language of Nigeria. You will remember that Taiwo, if somebody's called Taiwo, they're a twin, because Taiwo means twin. And Taiwo is the first twin to come out. Do you remember that? Anyway, Taiwo Awoniyi is going to Nottingham Forest, ex-Liverpool.
Yeah, that's right. Couldn't get a work permit for Liverpool, so they loaned him out a couple of times. And then he met Union Berlin, and it was beautiful. When he ended up going there permanently, really, really good for them. And he was their top scorer last season, scored 20 goals last season, ended up being their top scorer of all time in the top flight. Of course, they've only been in the top flight for three seasons. And his last goal proved to be quite the parting gift, because it made sure they qualified for the Europa League next season, having been in the Conference League this season. I think there's a couple of things that are really impressive about him. His strength and power is obviously something that will make people look at him and think he's suitable for the Premier League. But I think there's much more to him than that. He's super intelligent. He's a great finisher. He doesn't just have to wait for a chance. He can make his own opportunities as well. And I think if you look at the point midway through last season when Max Kruse, his strike partner, went back to Wolfsburg, and he was quite open that he went back for the money, which is fine, of course. But Cruz is a really irreplaceable player, especially for a team like Union. He's a player who's a really creative sort of striker who can see a pass. And I wondered how it would affect Awoniyi's form when Cruz went. But he responded really brilliantly. He took the weight on his shoulders, and that they got to the Europa League and actually to the brink of the Champions League. They weren't that far off in the end. a huge part of it was down to him. So I think that he can succeed and score goals in a team that doesn't create bucket loads of chances makes him not just a good player, but very valuable for Forest and what they're trying to do in re-establishing themselves in the Premier League.
What about this defensive midfielder who's going to Fulham, João Paulinho? What can you tell us about him?
We talked about the money before and how well-backed Premier League clubs are. You know, this guy should be Portugal's starting midfield, starting defensive midfielder going all the way forward. And he should have been at the start of the Euros. It would have given them a better start to the Euros last year, I think. He's a champion with Sporting. He's come on so much in the past 2 to 3 years. Really well built, but also very judicious on the ball as well. Doesn't have to dive into tackles because he always gets himself in the right spot, even though he can handle himself physically. For me, straight away, I thought it was remarkable that a club like Fulham, a team like Fulham, could get him. But that is the financial power of the Premier League. And I think if you're looking to protect the defence, if you're looking to have a solid spine, he's absolutely ideal for them.
Guys, we've had an amazing response on social media to our offer to mention any footballers of interest being transferred over the summer period. Absolutely amazing response, I must say. And just to say, you can get hold of us anytime during the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotton, at Ibayo, at Andy Brassel, and at David Jacka. So this tweet is from Brian, who says, and this is, by the way, about players playing in Euroland who aren't coming to the UK, but nevertheless, Sebastian Haller, West Ham fans remember him very well, and of course, he went to Holland, but he's now gone to Germany, gone to Dortmund, as a kind of a replacement, is he, for Haaland, who's gone to Man City?
Yeah, I think the thing with Haller is, he is extremely, extremely different to Erling Haaland. But I think what I admire most about what Haller has done, he could have really, really gone under after that period at West Ham and, you know, really, really been weighed down by the failure of that. I didn't even want to use the word failure there, but, you know, that's essentially where it was there. So for him to, to rejuvenate himself at Ajax, get another big move, I think is really, really impressive. It goes to show his character, his mentality, and you know what he's capable of. In terms of on the field, I think, you know, he's shown his energy in the penalty area and his aggression, basically, when it comes to attacking the ball in the penalty area, the way he takes up positions in there, the way his movement is as well. I think that's really impressive. And I think, you know, Dortmund are switching. I think we're going to see a big switch in Dortmund's style and how they play. And if we look, they've got Adeyemi in as well, who's also going to add another dimension to their attack. It's going to be interesting to see how everybody fits in there. And overall, from a Dortmund point of view, while we're there, I think they've done probably some of the smartest business in Europe this summer so far. They've got their signings in early. They haven't been involved really in any, you know, tussle, any back and forth. They knew Haaland was going. He's gone early and they've been able to plan accordingly. And I think they look in really, really good shape.
I would agree with that. And I think, if you talk about the good bits of business they've done, I think one that's kind of gone under the radar that is going to be really important for them, you talked about Axel Witsel being way past his best earlier, David, which I would agree with. I think that they've got Sally Özcan in from Köln. It's going to protect their defence, their new defence, of course, because they've brought in Zula and Schlotterbeck. You can have the best defenders in the world. If you haven't got a decent defensive midfielder to hold it down in front of them and a decent structure in front of them, then they're just going to be open, especially with the possession-based way that Dortmund play. So I think Özcan is going to be one of the best pieces of business. You know, cost, what, 6-7 million euros, which is great pickup, I think. He's proved himself as a really good Premier, really good Bundesliga player. But going back briefly to Haller, I think where he could be, I don't know if more valuable than Haaland is the right word, because Haaland was obviously fantastic for them and the numbers are great. I think what it is with Haaland, you've got to accept, it's not just about the goals. Of course, his goal scoring for Ajax and his goal scoring in the Champions League was exemplary last season. But to have a centre forward who can bring other players into play, like he did with Dusan Tadic and others, I think that's super important. And I think Adeyemi will benefit from that. Marco Reus will benefit from that. Youssoufa Moukoko will benefit from that. So I think it's what he adds to the team besides goals that makes him super important.
I think you're both right about Haller. I think he's a quality player. And I take your reluctance to describe his time at West Ham as a failure, David, because I think he's superb. It didn't work out for him at West Ham, but you know, a striker that can play with his back to goal in the penalty area, mate, and hold people off, I think you'd be mad to not suggest that this is a quality signing from them. Anyway, we've got another tweet from Corstonbury, who says, and this is a great question actually, all this talk about swap deals, you hear so much about it when it comes to transfer windows, swap deals. And Corsonbury says, especially this year, but do they ever actually happen? Who wants to take that?
Yeah, I think a lot more swap deals happen than are actually described as swap deals. I think, especially post-pandemic, teams are having to be more creative. Of course, swap deals are something that has been part of the Serie A transfer landscape for donkey's years. But I think we saw with the, I suppose one of the most celebrated swap deals that wasn't a swap deal would have been Miralem Pjanic for Artur between Barcelona and Juventus. Now, everyone in the world knows that that is essentially a swap deal, but it's sold as two independent transfers. Why? Well, say, for example, you've got two players who you think are of equal value. Say we've got two players, Club A and Club B, each have a player who's worth 50 million. Now, when you sign a player for 50 million, you can amortize the cost of the transfer fee over the length of the contract. So you sign him for 50 million and it goes down on the accounts if he's got a 5-year contract as 10 million a year. When you sell a player for 50 million, that all goes on this year's slate. So it comes off as a big profit. And especially when so many clubs, and we've been talking about the financial gymnastics that Barcelona and Atletico are grappling with at the moment. If you structure it, a swap deal, as two separate transfers, it's way better for your accounts.
David, you'd agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. Look, it's... It's just the name of the game now. It's a business thing. You know, it's almost not really, you know, from a on the pitch stylistic point of view, it is a business deal. But this is the way things are now. Clubs, I think, have been run so poorly, elite clubs, that they have to do transfers like this. They shouldn't have to, but they do. And yeah, it's the name of the game.
Okay, one more tweet from Jack. You kind of answered this in so many different ways, both of you. But nevertheless, who's done the best deal over this summer period?
Well, we talked about midfielders before, didn't we? And Sally Özcan, I think, is up there for Dortmund. Another one I'd point out that's just got over the line in the last day or so is Vitinha to Paris Saint-Germain from Porto. Now, I guess there will be people out there, particularly Wolves fans, scratching their heads thinking, hang on, we could have signed this guy permanently for half the price. He's gone back to Porto, had a good season, and now he's playing for PSG. Well, you know, sometimes it's just not the right time, it doesn't happen, or maybe they could have given Vitinha more of a chance. I certainly think that's the case. But I think he's really important for what PSG are trying to do. And what they're trying to do is make more sensible signings rather than superstar signings. Vitinha did have a very good season at Porto. What is so important about him is he's someone who uses the ball very well. He can make the team tick. And the problem they've had for a number of years is that Marco Verratti is unlike any other midfielder in the world. He's also a walking booking who can't keep himself fit. And so they need someone to play with him / play for him. They've needed that for a long time. And I think they've seen in Vitinha the player who can do that.
And for me, it's a favourite of mine. He has been for quite some time. Marc Roque, heading to Leeds from Bayern Munich. €10 million. I think this lad's had a bad run of it. When he was at Espanyol, before he left for Bayern Munich, we were talking about a player who was, I think, on the verge of stardom. I think he was going to be a key part of the Spain team, the next great Spain team. I think he probably could have commanded a move to a lot of clubs. But he ended up going to Bayern. And he just happened to arrive at Bayern in a time when they were going through a lot of changes and things weren't really settled. And I think it really, really hindered him. And I think he was also impacted by the style of football that was going to be played there as well. And for whatever reason, those reasons involved, it didn't work out. Now, he gets a chance, I think, to come to Leeds, be a starting midfielder because Calvin Phillips is off to Manchester City. For a fraction of the money they're going to get for Calvin Phillips, they get a player who can do exactly what Phillips does, but also I think he can provide a little bit more as well. He can join the attack. He can play a little bit of box to box if he wants to. His passing range, excellent. Vision of the game, really impressive too. He can stick a foot in, so he's not scared of tackling either, which he'll have to do plenty of in that Leeds team. And I think he's a really, really, just really, really impressive player. He's lovely to watch. I think the Leeds fans will, they're going to be sad that Phillips is gone, but I think they've got a player in Roque who's very exciting. And as well, Leeds' business has been really impressive so far. I think to get Aronson and Christiansen in and Roque all for $50 million, I think is good business. And that's essentially going to be the Phillips money. They're going to sell Rafinha. And from the names that they've been linked with so far, I'm very confident that they'll get in somebody, equally as impressive. And I think, they've been linked with Gakpo, a really smart, just really exciting player. Charles Catella as well, another one who's really interesting. So it's going to be interesting to see what Leeds do with the Rafinha money next, because I like what they've done with the Calvin Phillips money.
Yeah, normally at this time, regular on the continent listeners will know that we ask you to give a recommendation of game of the week and a food pairing to go with it. Obviously, we're not doing that now on this summer break, but given that this is all about transfers and we'll be back with another OTC transfer special next week. But I may as well say, when you do a decent deal, you celebrate it with a drink. And I'm here in Stockholm, where you can only buy the booze from the government appointed Systembolaget. But I bought some booze for you both, to recommend for you both, some punch, some old style punch, which is a liqueur, and some Starker, which is some strong beer as well, to go down well with any good business done in the transfer window.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it.
it'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.